You are listening to Zoom, the Retro Comic Book Show.
Welcome to Zoom. I'm your host, Timmy Zoom. This episode, I'm joined by Josh Hadley of the Jackalope Radio Network as we talk about graphic novels, comic books, aliens, predators, and a whole bunch of other things. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome to Doom. I'm your host, Timmy Doom. This episode, I'm joined by Josh Hadley from Radiodrome at Jackalope Radio. How you doing, Josh?
Hi, how you doing, Tim?
Great, great. I listen to all your podcasts. Josh here, well, I don't know, maybe you can give a quick summary of the three shows that you do on Jackalope Radio.
I do Lost in the Static, which is really more of a nostalgic look at everything. Radiodrome, which is really movie-based, and then, can I swear on this show?
Yeah, you can cuss.
And then What the Fuck is more or less of a current event show, so it's a little harder to tag down what we talk about on that specifically.
And I listen to all those shows. I started with Radiodrome, because it's like old movies and stuff you talk about with the Cinema Snob, and then I got on to Lost in the Static and What the Fuck. I enjoy those shows, too. But What the Fuck, you know, the people always tell you, there's another show called WTF, not What the Fuck, with this comedian, Marc Maron, that he is like a popular podcast.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
But yours is What the Fuck, is it still
Yeah,
different.
I've heard of that one. When I created mine, I had never heard of the other one. So it was literally, I didn't know about the Marc one until after the fact. And I just said, I'm not changing.
Yeah, you're right, but this is still different because this is WTF and yours is What the Fuck. But I wanted to have you on my show, a comic-based show, because, you know, you like comic books and you're very opinionated on your other shows, and I want to get your opinions about some comic book stuff since you don't get to delve into that a lot on your other shows.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. All my other co-hosts are not comic book fans, so I'm the outsider on that one.
And I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name on Lost in the Static.
Scott.
Scott. He seems like a comic book guy.
He's not. He's never been a comic book guy. That always surprised me, too.
That's weird. Now, all those guys are movies guys, and I'm your age. Okay, well, me, I'm a little older than you. And I was 5 years old when Star Wars came out, and I never got into Star Wars, but I was always a Spider-Man fan. From as far back as I can remember, I'm a Marvel Comics guy, you know. So, let's get into it. This is going to be kind of a short show, about 40 minutes or so. And I just wanted to ask you some general things because both you and I, we don't read the newest comics all the time. And we just like comics in general. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay.
You are very right.
So there was, but we love them, and some of your things that you said on your show I wanted to ask you about, and I'm glad you brought this up in our emails. One of them was I heard you you talk about comic book movies. Oh, there's a...
Sorry, I forgot to unplug the phone.
Oh, that's cool. You were talking about comic book movies, and you got onto the subject of graphic novels, and when people refer to comic book movies, they say, oh, this is from the graphic novel, the popular graphic novel. You got pissed about that, and you said they're comic books. And I remember hearing that show and thinking about that a lot. And I was like, well, it's not. And you were really indignant about it. I don't know.
I was.
But, if you compact a bunch of comic books together, it is now a novel. It's like, you know, it's like 100, 200 pages. And the audience likes that. And besides, comic book, don't you think that takes down the art a little bit, the art of it all, because it's you got a writer, a real writer like Neil Gaiman or Grant Morrison Alan Moore putting their work into this, and you're going to call it a comic book or a funny book is a, don't you think, a kind of antiquated term?
No, I don't. I think people like to artificially elevate the comic art by using the term graphic novel, because in the general populace, you know, comic books, like you pointed out, they're considered like kids stuff, and you know, your general mom of three doesn't realize that comic books matured as she matured. So if you call it a graphic novel, then all of a sudden you can kind of lie to yourself and say, well, I don't read comic books. See, I'm reading the adult stuff. I'm reading a graphic novel, even though it's still about costume superheroes in homoerotic poses battling each other. That's a comic book. That is not a graphic novel.
But we got a lot of, it's a wide spectrum. First of all, you got your scalps, you got your 100 bullets. These are subjects, you know, that are brought about in regular novels, movies. So if you have a quote-unquote comic book version of it, I mean, that could be called a graphic novel. And even the superhero stuff delves into more mature subjects.
Well, I mean,
nowadays,
for example, take Watchmen. Watchmen, Alan Moore himself has said he is sick of hearing that term graphic novel. He said The Watchmen is a goddamn comic book. It was never a graphic novel. He said he wrote a comic book, but people keep calling Watchmen a graphic novel and somehow elevating it above Spider-Man and Captain America and Superman. And he said, no, it's not. It's in the same category. Even Frank Miller, before he went batshit insane, had a great quote where he said, the only difference between a comic book and a graphic novel is the same difference between a prostitute and a lady of the evening. They're the same thing, but you're lying to yourself so you feel better about spending the money on it.
Okay, but and I can understand that, but what about this last thing I want to bring up concerning that? Wouldn't you say, okay, Alan Moore and a group of the British writers who came over in the mid-80s with him, he elevated comic books a little bit, don't you think? So why can't they, you know, the industry say, well, we want to change the term. You don't agree with that? I mean, don't you agree that he did?
I do agree he elevated it, but I think it's an artificial term. It's, okay. For instance, did you see the trailer for that Superman Doomsday animated movie that came out 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. I never saw the movie, but I saw the trailer.
In the trailer, remember Doomsday, the plotline where Superman got killed?
Yes.
That was serialized over multiple different comics, including Justice League and other non-Superman titles, yet the trailer says, based on the best-selling graphic novel, Doomsday.
Now, did they...
made my head explode when I saw that.
That's what I heard you say on Cinema. Oh, well, okay, my, did they ever collect that?
Just as a trade paperback, but that's not a graphic novel.
Okay. Because I was saying there was a difference between something that was released as a graphic novel and a trade paperback. It's still a thick book of, you know, a long story told in like a novel format. But I guess you don't agree. You would never agree a trade paperback is a graphic novel.
No, I wouldn't. Like, an example of a graphic novel would be, have you ever read X-Men God Loves, Man Kills from 1982?
Yeah.
That's a graphic novel. That was doing something and dealing with subject matter and using language that Claremont could not have used in the regular comic. He had to do it as a special one-shot for adults. That's a graphic novel.
And I remember in the early – Marvel kind of created a graphic novel in the early 80s with – you know, the X-Men story you just talked about, and the She-Hulk. I remember the She-Hulk one. But nowadays, since the 90s and up, the comic code has gone away, and the stories have elevated, you know, have more mature themes anyway. So when you collect like the six comic books into a trade paperback, I think it's similar to a graphic novel. But I know you ain't never going to agree on that, you think?
I think you and I are going to have to respectfully disagree on that one.
Okay, and then speaking of, you were talking about Frank Miller going batshit crazy. Oh, no, before you get into that, you mentioned Alan Moore, and now he's saying that a comic book is still a comic book, what he wrote with The Watchmen. But remember, there was Time Magazine who wanted to have like the 50 best novels that year that came out that year, and they did a story.
It was the like 100 greatest novels of all time, and Watchmen was on it. Yes, I remember that.
But there was a story done in one of these magazines where they wanted to take a picture. Did you hear about this story of Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons? But they wanted to take them in the Batman pose, you know, like Batman, you know, the old campy TV series. Right. And they'd be like walking on a building, and Robin and Gibbons, and they, and I'm more like, fuck that. You know, they didn't want to be associated with that comic book style at that
time. Right. Which is, well, because see, that is the problem with public perception. They grew up on, say, the Batman show or the really goofy 70s Spider-Man show where he shot ropes out of his arms and things. And that's what they think comic books are. That's the problem. They didn't grow up with the comics as the comics grew up.
Okay. So
that's the problem.
So you're saying comic book still doesn't mean campy, goofy. Comic book is whatever a comic book is.
It's the format. Okay.
All right, so we got that out of the way. And I was bringing up the subject you mentioned earlier, Frank Miller, before he went batshit insane. And you want to talk about the time. When did that shift change? I guess that's what you wanted to talk about.
I think something happened to him in Hollywood. Because if you notice, you go back to when his writing started to go into a steep decline. It's when he went to Hollywood to go make RoboCop 2 and 3. So I think something happened in Hollywood, because that's when his writing went to shit.
Okay, I may have to agree, because I stopped reading comics for a long time, like in the early 90s. So I don't know if that was the Sin City period. So I don't know. Somewhere in the early 90s, it had to be where things fell off. Because when I came back to comics, I started to hear about, you know, Dark Knight 2 and some of the other things that he wrote. And of course, in the 2000s, you know, he has the I'm the goddamn Batman in All-Star Batman. Yeah, so it had to be, he was, when was he, his heyday was the 80s, you know, Daredevil, you know, the classic storyline with Elektra.
And the Elektra Assassin miniseries, Dark Knight Returns, I think is still absolutely a phenomenal book. That's an absolutely phenomenal book. And then you had Ronin.
Yeah, I never read Ronin. And yeah, anything he touched in the 80s, I guess you could say, was good.
Yeah, and then he went to Hollywood to go make, because he wrote RoboCop 2 and 3, and he went out there to help produce the movies, and then when he came back from Hollywood, it's like they stole his brain.
When was 300? When did he do 300? Do you know?
The comic book. The comic.
It's probably in the 90s.
I was going to say like 99, 2000, somewhere around there.
And I didn't read that, so I don't know if it's a good comic where people enjoyed the movie.
I didn't like the comic, and the movie has actually less depth than the comic did, if you can believe that.
So we can agree that it was when he went to Hollywood, which was RoboCop 2 time. That was the late 80s. That was 89 or 90 when he...
89.
And, did you ever read... and I didn't read all of them, but I read a lot of them, of the RoboCop comic book that he did in the 2000s that was supposed to be the original script of the movie, RoboCop 2.
No, I didn't. That's one I missed, because that's when I was all pissed at Frank Miller, so I wasn't buying any of his stuff. But I've heard those are actually pretty decent, because it's stuff he wrote before he went insane.
I agree. I thought they were good. Some people who I talked to didn't like it, but I liked it. I liked it a lot. And you know, it was just a rougher, grittier edge.
Well, I do have to take back one thing I said. He did do one comic in the 2000s I thought was really good, and that was Tales to Offend. It was basically, let's take Buck Rogers and play him up as this misogynistic, scumbag, money-grubbing, womanizing piece of crap. And I thought Lance Blastoff, that's the character, was actually a really funny parody of Buck Rogers.
Okay, cool. Then that sounds like a good recommendation. It was a one-shot, or was it just...
It was a bunch of short stories over Dark Horse Presents, but it was reprinted as a one-shot called Tales to Offend.
Okay, cool. Then that's a recommendation from my listeners. All right, so with some other subject. Oh, since we were talking about late 80s stuff, like RoboCop, another popular Jenner movies from the late 80s was Alien and Predators. And you want to talk a little bit about the... Because I'm interested in this too. When you get a popular movie franchise like Star Wars, Aliens, Predators, RoboCop, and they transfer them to the comic books, I'm always interested in that. As long as it's not like a kid version, like I didn't read this RoboCop series. I assume it was a kid version, the Marvel comic book series of RoboCop, it looked too, I don't know, it looked too much for kids for me.
I think that one was a spinoff of, because Marvel did the cartoon of RoboCop.
Yeah, they did.
So it was an adaptation of the cartoon.
Yeah, so I stayed away from that. But I read a few of the, I read the Aliens and Predators comics, and I recently went back and got the Predator comics from 1989. Now, what was it that you read in the late 80s concerning the Aliens and the Predators? Did you read any of those?
Okay, you got to remember, this is pre-Alien 3, but I remember when I picked up the very first issue of the very first Aliens comic, when they got their own one, the black and white one by Mark Verhaeden, it just blew me away at how well written it was, how well thought out the universe was, how, at least in the first three or four issues, how little the aliens actually factor into the story, and yet you don't care, because it's a really interesting story. The Mark Verhaeden books were amazing.
Well, now, what was the story? Was it a Space Marines type of setting, or was it something different?
It was, like I said, you got to keep in mind this is pre-Alien 3, so it starred Hicks and Newt, you know, because both of them were still alive at that point. And it was 5 or so years after Aliens. Hicks is all scarred, and he's being kicked out of the military, and he's a drunk, and nobody believes Newt because they covered up what happened on LV-426, so she's in a mental home. And some derelict spacecraft comes across what they think is the aliens' homeworld. And it's an absolutely brilliant story that has huge ramifications at the end. I don't want to ruin it, but the ramifications in the final issue will just they'll impact your colon. It'll hit you so hard.
Yeah, well, I got a hold of some of those at your recommendation. I didn't get a chance to read them before this, but now I'm definitely going to check that out. What I read just recently... What I reread recently was the Aliens versus Predator, the first comic book in like 1989, and I was
I loved that one. I loved that book. That I remember buying those when those were new. That book was awesome.
With the settlers on the planet, the ranchers on the colony.
Rishi, I think, was the name of the planet.
Yeah. And yeah, okay, so we on the same page. Now I read a novelization before I read any comic books, and I think the novelization was similar to the comics, but not the same thing.
It was based off the same source material, but went way deeper than the comic was able to. Yeah. I mean, it had brilliant insights into the Predator's point of view, because you remember when I hope I'm not going to butcher her name, Mekigo Nakagai, whatever the main character's name is.
Yeah,
she gets some alien acid spilled on her armor, and so the Predator that she's allied with takes her armors off and notices her boobs for the first time. Errol, he calls them milk glands, and that's when he realizes that she's female.
Okay, oh, that, okay.
Females are bigger than males, but in the human world, females are smaller than males, and it's a brilliant little take on the Predator culture right there.
And when you get a good writer, you can always, you know, you can always make these movies or make these stories great. I mean, greater than the original source. I remember a friend of mine telling me that Gremlins 2, he was telling me some things. No, he read the Gremlins novelization, and he was telling me things about that fascinated me. I'd rather read the book of some of these movies than watch the movie. But
on that top, Tim, check out the Predator 2 novelization if you can find it. Not only is it a really good version of the movie, half of the book, at least half of it, is told from the Predator's perspective.
I think I better check that out, because I was telling you I read the Predator. I'm gonna get back to Aliens versus Predator, but I read the Predator comic book from 1989, and I was like, and I didn't realize it was right before Predator 2 that this was made. But I was like, this is pretty damn good. I think Verhaeden wrote that too, but. They set up this concrete jungle. That's what it's called, Predator Concrete Jungle. And they just set up the city atmosphere so well. It started out with this guy. It was a hot, sunny day, and this guy's in the apartment with his wife, and she's watching soap operas or something. No, Green Acres. And they're doing a marathon all day. And he's like, I'm tired of this goddamn Green Acres. And he just snaps and kills his wife. And I thought that was, you know, it was the art and everything was a great setup to the story. But as I was reading it, I was like, this, it dealt with a cop in the city having to fight drug dealers and the Predator. And I said, this is similar to the damn movie. And you told me that they took the Predator 2 from this, from that comic book.
Yeah, it was based off the original Predator 2 script. Because Predators, because, like, do you remember Gary Busey's character in Predator 2?
Yeah, I'm, well,
as Peter Keyes, the government agent.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That role was originally offered to Arnold Schwarzenegger for the Dutch character.
Okay, oh, okay. Wait, oh, it's supposed to be Dutch coming back?
Yeah, that was supposed to be start. Dutch, but he turned it down to do Terminator 2 instead.
Which, that's a good choice, in my opinion. Like,
good choice, but it to me, that totally changes what that character was supposed to be as well. Yeah. Because that character is kind of a dickhead.
Oh, yeah, and of course, if Dutch was there, they would have made him a little more heroic than that. I thought the choice of Danny Glover in the movie, at the time, I hated the movie, and my friends, they loved it, and they was, you know, I was criticized. I was like, they should have had somebody more like Carl Weathers instead of Danny Glover at the time, because I felt, you know, with Carl Weathers, he had already been in the first movie and got killed. But I'm saying somebody more Arnold Schwarzenegger-esque. I mean, what did you think of Danny Glover in the lead?
I kind of had the same opinion of you at first when I saw the trailers and everything. I thought Danny Glover can't take on a Predator. And then after you see the movie, and it really does make sense. And there's also something else that the novelizations and the comics don't tell you about the first two Predator films. Those are vastly different creatures. The Predator in the first movie is a mature female, well hunted, tons of experience. The Predator in the second movie is an immature male on his first hunt of humans.
That's...
Which also accounts for the stupid mistakes the Predator makes in Predator 2. He does not have the experience that the creature in the first film had.
That's very interesting. I didn't even know that the females hunt. Every time I see Predators go out, I always think it's like a group of males going out on a hunt. I never think of it in the term that some of them are females, but and it's a man playing a part in part one, and you saying she was a female.
The character was a female.
Wow,
yes.
If
you read the novelization, the character was a female, and humans to the Predators, we are the most dangerous and most expensive prey in the universe because we are the most unpredictable. Humans have killed more Predators than any other piece of prey that they've ever encountered. So Predators aren't allowed to just hunt humans randomly. You have to earn the right to hunt a human, which it's implied in the novelization of Predator 2. Mm-hmm. The Predator that was there, the reason that the ones at the end didn't really give a shit when he got killed was he was breaking the rules. He wasn't supposed to be hunting humans yet.
Again, stuff that you get out of novels that you don't see in the movies. That's pretty cool. And they kind of inferred that in this Alien versus Predator comic book, they had some, you know, they have some young bucks out there, and they had, you know, they had the older guys kind of mentoring them, and they were supposed to be hunting aliens on this planet. They didn't know humans were there, and they run into humans on it takes place in the future sometime.
It takes place in the alien timeline. It takes place in the timeline of aliens. I think it's the years like 70 years after aliens, okay. Something along there.
Okay. And then there was something else I saw, and the last thing I want to mention about that comic book, first of all, Aliens vs. Predator, that's a very good story. Not the movie from the 2000s, but the comic book.
The original comic,
And the novelization. There was a scene in there, the Asian woman who you just said, I can't even pronounce her name. She's the lead.
Makiko Nakagai, I believe is how it's pronounced, but I might be butchering it.
Yeah, she's the head. She works for this corporation, and she's in charge of this ranching operation on a distant colony. She ends up teaming up with the Predator when the aliens basically destroy her colony, and she has to team up with him to destroy these aliens, and they form a bond, and he takes some alien acid and burns a little, you know, symbol on her face, you know, as some kind of, you know, symbolic friendship or whatever. They do the same thing in the Aliens versus Predator first movie. I never watched that movie all the way through, but I've seen clips, and I know that they do that with Sinead. So yeah. I guess that's something they took from it.
And they actually followed up on that plotline. Makiko appeared in another book called War as well, which was really good, which followed her hunting with the Predator. She's the first human to have ever been accepted into a Predator clan, and all the younger Predators that look down on her and kind of, what the fuck is that human doing here? You know, we should be hunting them. They shouldn't be hunting with us. You know, so it also dealt with her being an outsider in this culture, even though she was an outsider as a human too. It's pretty cool. The War comic.
Why didn't they just take something like that, like either one of those storylines, and use that as a movie? I know it would have been a bigger budget. They wouldn't need it, but wouldn't it be better to preserve your franchise? Because the fans seem to hate these two Aliens versus Predator movies.
Because they suck. Okay.
I saw the second one, Requiem, Aliens versus Predator Requiem. And I enjoyed it the first time around. My friends lambasted me for that. They're like, how could you like that piece of shit? I only watched it once, and I think I liked it just because it showed me the action. But I admit it had to be bad, because at the end, they just show you right out. They have a son, father and son hunting animals in the forest, and then the Predator kills them and just basically does what he does in the first movie right off the bat, rips out their spine and their skull, and they do the thing. Oh, go ahead.
To me, the plot twist at the end of that movie is the most offensive thing that anyone could have done to those. It turns out, you know, I'll spoil it. It turns out,
go ahead and spoil it. Yeah.
The entire Weyland Yutani Corporation, which is the evil corporation in the Aliens universe, is built upon stolen Predator technology. And that is just, that is a middle finger up your ass to all the fans. that is so offensively stupid. I don't know how the brothers Strauss thought fans would not rebel against that stupidity.
So I'm not trying to see how that's so bad. Like, just making Doctor Who a human in a Doctor Who TV movie, that's bad. But or making them half human. But this here, all they're doing is just saying they use technology from another race, and now, you know, in that corporation. I don't know why that is so offensive.
It's so offensive because, like, when you watched Alien, you know, up until the Alien vs. Predator comic started in, I think, 88, when they first started appearing in Dark Horse Presents, and these two universes were totally separate. Now to say, oh yeah, when you go back and watch Alien, that's all based on Predator technology. That's an insult to both franchises right there. That would be like going back and saying, yeah, George Washington, he really wasn't the president of the United States. He was just, you know, the first president. He was just a stand-in. But, you know, it makes you feel better to know that maybe some Asian guy was actually the president and making all the decisions for George Washington. You know, it's so offensive. You're going back and rewriting history that was fine the first time. It didn't need to be rewritten like that.
Okay, I get it. We'll continue with the next, because we only had like one more topic. I want to talk about the superhero movies, and you said you wanted to skip why you think DC and Marvel universes feel so different, even though, I mean, that's kind of an interesting topic. It's not really a topic. I'll just have one sentence to say on that. Marvel, they started out trying to show you a more realistic, you know, what everybody says, a more real world. And DC's guys are all square-jawed white heroes. I'm not saying there's nothing bad with it, but they're just and the DC universe was a little more perfect, a little more, at least in the 70s and early 80s, a little more like Leave It to Beaver. In my opinion, that's what I saw it as. And
I would agree with that. Which is
gritty.
The only thing that was good about the Justice League Avengers crossover was how the team got dropped in the alternate universe, the sort of culture shock they got. You know, the Marvel heroes weren't used to being idolized, whereas the DC heroes weren't used to being looked down upon. I thought that was a really nice touch.
I wanted to ask you about was some of these superhero movies. Now, you like a lot of stuff from before 2000. You like 80s, early 90s, right? Am I right? 70s?
Yes.
Okay, so But even though that's the case, a lot of these movies that I wanted to ask you about, the later movies I want to ask you about, the more recent movies, they're still from comics from the 80s and the 70s, like The Watchmen. And I did not hear you like that from what I heard, right?
I liked Watchmen. I liked Watchmen in a weird way. I actually liked the plot twist at the end of the movie better than I liked the plot twist in the comic.
Oh, yeah, at the end, yeah, and you said it, and because everybody knows the story. Instead of using, and I hate when fans say this, that squid, I agree totally with you. I've said this on my show before. The squid is just a little bit too campy and stupid and come out of nowhere. But using Dr. Manhattan as the twist, it makes total sense because he was established there in that universe already. It just makes more sense. And the people of the Watchmen universe are probably already scared of him.
It was arguably more realistic too. It was a more realistic way to get to the same outcome.
Yeah, because they were afraid of nuclear war between the United States and the Russian. And here you see like similar, what is a nuclear blast happening, and that kind of wakes the people up. You know, I mean, because that was the rather than a squid. Well, what the fuck is it?
It's a big space monster.
Exactly. I can see it where he did that. He said, you know, this is a comic book and I just let's have a nice B movie ending, but that doesn't fit for the film. And the people who want the squid in the movie, they just wanted to see a squid in the movie. They didn't care about it making sense or anything. They just wanted to see a squid for squid's sake. But it would have, the rest of the audience who's not familiar with comics would have laughed at that and just said, okay, this is even more reason not to like the movie.
Right. And I also liked the fact that they didn't cast the movie differently. I mean, they let Dan be an overweight kind of loser, that they didn't feel the need to cast some Taylor Lautner kind of guy to play Night Owl. I liked that.
Well, Night Owl was kind of handsome-ish, and his suit, he didn't have his belly hanging out. His suit was like a Batman-ish. I mean, in my opinion, he was a little bit too clean cut. You know, everything was like crisp for me, for his character. But go ahead.
But they didn't cast a pretty boy, which is what they really could have done.
That's true.
They cast someone that looked more like a normal, everyday, down-on-your-luck kind of guy.
And I did like the casting. I liked everybody in the cast. I liked the movie. You know, some people say they didn't like the female hero character. I can't believe her name is escaping me. But I like...
Silk
Spectre. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Silk Spectre.
Yeah, the Silk Spectre 2. And... yeah, I liked her character. I like everybody's character. I thought it was perfect. And even though some people had a problem, some of my friends, with the superheroes who are regular people being a little bit too, you know, superheroic, like in the Batman comic books, like they were more than just fighting. They had superb fighting skills, and they had inhuman. Rorschach was a little bit inhuman with his skills. But I'm like, hey, they're superheroes. You got to make it a little larger in life for the movie screen.
And see, the only thing I didn't like that they changed was Rorschach's origin. When he, if you remember in the comic, when he killed that child molester, he did it all Saw style, handcuffed him to a radiator or something, gave him a saw, and said, "This won't go through the chains, but you'll get through your wrist." And then he set the building on fire. In the movie, he just hits him in the head with a cleaver. It's like, what?
Thank you for saying that. I'm glad you brought that up too, because that's the only other thing that really I was like, "What?" It was so much better in the comic book. I remember he said, "Yeah, he gave him a cleaver. He had a meat cleaver, and he said you could hack through your hands." But what made it better is he just walked away while you were wondering what's this guy going to do, and he set the house on fire. So you're like, "This guy, you're imagining this stuff happening is more horrific than him just slamming the meat cleaver into the guy's head." I don't know why Zack Snyder made that choice, unless
I think to avoid the connotation with the
Saw. Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But they did it first in that comic book, you know.
But to a non-comic fan, it's going to look like a ripoff. A non-comic fan's not going to know that. They're going to think, oh, he took that from the Saw movies.
I would have made the choice of Zack Snyder to keep the comic book thing and just hope that, you know, in the future, when people watch it 20 years from now, they're not going to be really thinking about Saw. They're going to be thinking about this movie as its own entity, because that scene, it works because he's walking away and you're just imagining this guy cutting his hand or burning up in the house, but
right. What you gonna do? And so to me, that's the only change I did not like in Watchmen, but I did like Watchmen. I will go on record as saying that's probably about the only comic book movie made since at least 1995 I gave a shit about.
Okay, then I'll just go through these with you real quick. You can give your one sentence or two sentences. The Batman movies with Chris Nolan's Batman movies. How could you not like that? All the fans love this.
Okay, first of all, like with The Dark Knight, Nolan is such a manipulative creep. He manipulates the audience. Okay, look at it like this. Would you think Batman was nearly as cool if all the police officers around him were totally competent and he wasn't always saving their asses? Because you have to make Batman look cool. So to do that, you have to make everyone else look uncool so Batman looks cooler. Nolan made the Gotham City Police Department one of the most incompetent Keystone Cop police departments of all time. I mean, every single time they fall for every one of the Joker's traps, it's only Batman that's smart enough to go, wait a minute, something's not right here. Every single time.
But that's the conceit of the... you read Gotham Central comics, any of those?
No.
Okay, well, that's the thing they like about people like about the comic books. Like in Gotham Central, they're jealous. They hate Batman because he makes them look like shit. I mean, and that's how it is in the comic books. Even if you don't read Gotham Central, you know Batman's got to be the baddest motherfucker, and the cops are seriously lacking on their job because he's capturing all these supervillains. Plus, in Detective Comics, he solves regular crimes. You know, so I mean, to me, that coincides. They don't have to make any superhero in a city like Batman, any story, whether it's comic books or movies, they always do that. And I don't think they should make the cops look so dumb. But I mean,
they made the cops look really dumb. I mean, they know what the Joker looks like. And they know he's trying to assassinate Gordon. So, let's see. We'll make Gordon's honor guard the four cops we've never seen before. And one of them looks suspiciously like he has scars that look like the Joker. Ah, nothing weird about that.
I agree, but I just talked that was another these movies where you got to suspend your belief. But I know you don't want to suspend your belief that far. and then let's go the Avengers trailer. Well, forget. Oh, I should just say the Marvel's last few Marvel movies with all the Avengers in it, in general, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor. Go ahead, shoot. What's your problem with that?
I haven't seen Captain America. I haven't seen Thor, and I haven't seen Iron Man 2 because I don't care. I hated Iron Man. I absolutely hated the Hulk. I have no interest whatsoever in these new Marvel versions. And don't even get me started on Nick Fury as Samuel Jackson.
Well, you know that Samuel Jackson is Nick Fury in the Ultimates universe.
But the Ultimates universe is sort of, I don't know, I don't accept that as the real 616 Marvel universe. I don't like the Ultimates universe. The only alternate Marvel universe I'm willing to accept is Marvel Zombies because that's really fun.
Okay, now I respect you on that. Even though I don't see how nobody could not like Iron Man and how you can't be excited about seeing the Avengers on screen finally together.
First of all, I'm not a big Joss Whedon fan, and I know that's going to lose me a lot of support right there. The guy is just not that good as his reputation leads people to believe it is.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Go ahead.
But here's the problem. Whenever Joss Whedon makes something, he makes it with this attitude of, I am as good as everyone thinks I am. You know, my dialogue really is that witty. I really am this good, and I can't stand that. You know, when I was reading Iron Man, Tony Stark was not this flippant, you know, if I take my photo with you, I better not see that show up on Facebook. Just kidding. That's not the Tony Stark I grew up with. I can't stand the Robert Downey Jr. Tony Stark, for one.
Okay.
I can't stand that. That's not the Tony Stark I grew up reading.
Now, I do like him, but I admit the Timothy Dalton, or not Timothy Dalton, but somebody like that might be more of a Tony Stark. Somebody.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Right. You know, and then Thor, I'm sorry, he still looks like just a dumb surfer to me. I mean, as bad as he looked in the Hulk TV movie, He still looks like a big dumb surfer.
That's how he looks in the comic books. I'm like, who the hell is he? He's a big blonde bombshell of a guy. And I mean, I accept that, but you're not excited to see. Well, you aren't excited about those movies separately. So I guess I can see why you're not excited about seeing them together, even though this is the Avengers.
The only thing I've liked so far that I've seen is Scarlett Johansson looks like she'll do a pretty good Black Widow, because I always thought Natasha Romanoff was a very good character, and I think Scarlett Johansson looks like she actually has a grip on what that character's supposed to be.
And what's interesting is one of the few Marvel characters who have been in live action for a long time, the Black Widow was the one, you know, she's the one who's been most depicted, or she's been depicted more than more to more popular. Like, there's this movie, Avengers, Iron Man 2, and you know, the death of the Incredible Hulk. that character in there was supposed to be Black Widow, the one who was. Did you ever see Death of the Incredible Hulk?
When it first aired, I haven't seen it in like a good 15, 20 years, whenever the hell it was. Whenever it first aired on CBS, yes, but not since then.
Yeah, me neither, but I remember that. I was like, because they were doing superheroes, like Incredible Hulk movies starring a superhero. They did Daredevil.
Daredevil and the Hulk. Oh, those were both awful.
Yeah, they were terrible. And then I said, who is this female supposed to be in the third one? And I assumed it was Black Widow, and it was. And I'm like, that's just funny to me that she's been in all these Marvel movies, but Silver Surfer's only been in one.
And it sucks.
Yeah. Well, his depiction was good. The depiction of him was good. Fantastic Four was awful. Go ahead.
To go back to Black Widow real quick, the only thing that bugs me about it is her hair is still too long. The Black Widow I grew up with was the short-haired, gray jumpsuited Black Widow. I know she had longer hair in the 70s, but to me, Black Widow does not look right with long hair. She needs that short haircut.
Okay, I give you that. She is a spy, and she's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I agree. Her hair will get caught on something. But, okay, to the final minutes of the show, probably, I'd say about 6-7 minutes. They're less than 10. I did want to ask you about this last thing. Now, I agree with you about Samuel L. Jackson playing. I don't like him as Nick Fury. I want my Nick Fury white. I'd rather have David Hasselhoff play him with an eye patch than Nick Fury. I just like my Nick Fury white. I like all my characters to stay the race that they were. I agree with you on that. But sometimes it doesn't matter. And you took an umbrage to this. The new Superman movie, Perry White is a black man played by Lawrence Fishburne. And I think that it's interchangeable, you know, but you had a problem with that on one of the episodes of Radiodrome.
Yeah, I had a problem with it on the level of they're changing the race for no apparent reason. You can't tell me that there wasn't plenty of white actors that could play that white role. Lawrence Fishburne is a great actor, don't get me wrong, and I think he'll actually do fine in the role. But that's not the role for him, because that character is not black. That would be like all of a sudden saying, you know, Jamie Foxx was better than J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson, so let's make J. Jonah Jameson black. The character is not black. That's my problem. It's the same thing. I don't think a white actor should be playing a black character. You know, I don't think Kevin James should ever be playing John Shaft. Jason Statham should not be John Shaft, although that would be really funny.
But you're going way back. So you had to look how far you had to go back to get an iconic black character. Black people don't care about Shaft anymore. We don't have any characters in Hollywood. Like, we wouldn't see ourselves in any of these comic book films. I think that's the producer's point of view. If they didn't change up somebody and make somebody black to say, oh, we're in society, and you know, and Perry White here, he's in his 50s, and it's the year 2011. So this is even though there shouldn't be any newspaper editors at all, he'd be in trouble for his job. But I'm saying nowadays they say, oh, Perry White could be a black guy. But that's it's not, at least it's not Superman that they changing, you know, because, you know, who else did they change? Oh, they changed Alicia from the Fantastic Four to a black woman. Ben Grimm's blind girlfriend in the comic book, yep. She's white. she, you know, went, and so they do things like that. But I agree. I don't want my Peter Parkers touched. I want Peter Parker to be, or Spider-Man to be the white Peter Parker. So for the most part, I agree. But you know, they,
as long as Peter Parker's not the clone.
Oh yeah. Or Ben Reilly or somebody.
Yeah, as long as it's Peter Parker as Spider-Man and not Ben Reilly as Spider-Man, okay. Then yes.
Okay, I'll give you that, man.
I just don't like them changing the race seemingly arbitrarily. You know, it's the same thing with like the new Battlestar Galactica series from 2003. There was no reason to change Starbuck to a woman, especially because they still kept kind of writing the character as a man. There was no reason for that other than to go, well, this is going to get us press coverage.
Yeah, I would like my Starbuck. I see him as a Han Solo type, and I wanted to see Starbuck. They changed Boomer out to an Asian woman, but I'm not
from a black. Well, and even Colonel Ty, that's one. He was a black man in Battlestar Galactica, and he was a very strong character. And I think Michael Hogan did a fine job, but I don't know. That's not Colonel Ty to me. Colonel Ty's a black guy.
The most problem I had with was Starbuck, of course, because he's an iconic character, and I wanted to see Starbuck here, played by Bradley Cooper or somebody. But okay, well, I enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for joining me.
Talking to you. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. I wish I could talk longer because there was more things I want to talk about, but yeah, I guess it's time constraints and we had schedules, things we got to do. So hopefully maybe you can join me another time, perhaps.
Absolutely. In the future.
Cool. So I'm going to wrap up the show. I did want to ask you a question after I wrap up the show. But for the rest of y'all, check out doomcast.blogspot.com for, you know, to post your opinions on this show. And Josh, is there any – do you want to hawk anything to our audience?
Listen to Radiodrome, Lost in the Static, and What the Fuck on jackaloperadio.com. You can find the archives. Otherwise, Lost in the Static and What the Fuck air on Saturday nights. Radiodrome airs on Thursday nights.
All right. Thanks a lot. Everybody, see y'all next time. Peace.